In my first day as a doctor at Boston's Brigham and Women's Hospital, I arrived with a pressed white coat, pockets overflowing with medical tools, and a head stuffed with facts. Yet none of this prepared me for the most common ailment I'd encounter among patients, loneliness. While Together has become a global phenomenon, selling over 1 million copies and being translated into 15 languages, its impact stems from addressing a universal human experience that transcends cultural boundaries. Oprah Winfrey called it one of the most important books of our time, while the New York Times praised Murthy's ability to weave scientific research with deeply personal stories. The book's relevance has only grown since the pandemic, as people worldwide recognize that our connections to one another aren't luxuries, they're necessities for our physical and emotional survival. As Murthy's journey from physician to surgeon general revealed, loneliness isn't just a feeling. It's a public health crisis hiding in plain sight. Our need for social connection isn't merely a feeling, but a biological imperative rooted in thousands of years of evolution. Dr. John Cacioppo, often called Dr. Loneliness, was the first to identify loneliness as a necessary warning signal with biochemical and genetic roots. After a near-fatal car accident in college made him realize the primacy of human connection, he changed his academic focus to study the biological underpinnings of relationships. Anthropological evidence dating back 52 million years shows early primates connected in groups rather than pairs, finding strength in numbers against predators. Group cooperation became especially valuable about 3 million years ago, when Australopithecus developed throwing abilities, enabling coordinated hunting and defense. Our ancestors' default setting was togetherness. Anthropologists estimate hunter-gatherers spent roughly one-third of their time socializing. This evolutionary advantage manifests biologically through hormones and neurotransmitters that reward connection. Oxytocin promotes in-group bonding while making us defensive against outsiders. Endorphins release during touch and synchronized movement. Dopamine motivates us to seek companionship. UCLA neuroscientist Dr. Matthew Liberman discovered through fMRI studies that humans have separate networks for social and non-social thinking, with our brains defaulting to social thinking during idle moments. When we experience loneliness, our bodies react as if we're stranded in wilderness surrounded by predators. Our sympathetic nervous system triggers fight-or-flight responses. Pupils dilate, airways open, heart rate increases, and stress hormones surge. This hypervigilance kept our ancestors alive, but damages modern bodies when prolonged, increasing cardiovascular stress, inflammation, and disease risk. Paradoxically, though evolution designed loneliness to motivate connection-seeking, chronic loneliness makes us withdraw. Stephanie Cacioppo found lonely brains detect social threats twice as fast as non-lonely ones, causing us to misread harmless situations as threatening. This hypervigilance, combined with increased self-focus, traps us in cycles of suspicion and alienation. The remarkable overlap between physical and emotional pain explains why loneliness hurts so much. Naomi Eisenberger's experiments with Tylenol demonstrate this connection. Subjects taking Tylenol for 3 weeks reported fewer days of social pain, and brain scans showed reduced activity in pain processing regions. This explains why people suffering loneliness might reach for powerful substances to self-medicate their emotional pain. Our drive to connect truly is a survival instinct. When we lack connection, we experience genuine pain that serves as a biological warning system. Loneliness signals that our social needs require attention, reminding us we're stronger together. Over 55 million Americans report often feeling lonely, more than the number of adult smokers and nearly double the number with diabetes. This epidemic spans the globe, with similar rates in Canada, 43%, Australia, 46%, the UK, 45%, Italy, 49%, and Japan, 41%. The shame surrounding loneliness creates a vicious cycle. We withdraw when feeling lonely, fearing judgment, which further isolates us and damages self-esteem. Young adults, particularly those between 18 to 22, report the highest rates of loneliness, challenging the stereotype that it primarily affects elderly populations. Dr. Julianne Holt-Lunstad's groundbreaking research revealed that weak social connections increase mortality risk as much as smoking 15 cigarettes daily, more than obesity, excess alcohol, or physical inactivity. Her meta-analysis of 148 studies involving more than 300,000 participants consistently showed loneliness correlates with higher risks of heart disease, 29% increased risk, stroke, 32% increased risk, dementia, 50% higher risk, depression, anxiety, poor sleep quality, immune dysfunction, and impaired judgment. The biological impact manifests through increased stress hormones, inflammation, and decreased immune function. Physicians increasingly recognize loneliness as a medical issue requiring systematic intervention. In the UK, 75% of general practitioners report seeing multiple patients daily whose visits are primarily driven by loneliness. Some doctors report that up to one-third of their appointments involve patients whose primary underlying issue is social isolation. Dr. Helen Stokes-Lampard made addressing loneliness a priority after seeing its impact on patients like Enid, who fell into depression after losing her husband. Rather than simply prescribing antidepressants, Helen connected Enid with a local school program linking older women with young mothers, leading to significant improvements in both groups' mental health. This social prescribing approach acknowledges that loneliness affects physical health in ways medication alone cannot address. Healthcare systems worldwide are implementing innovative solutions. Dr. Sachin Jain's CareMore Health System launched the Togetherness Program, which helps lonely patients through home visits, weekly calls, and community connections. The program reported a 21% reduction in emergency room visits among participants and improved medication adherence rates by 17%. Unlike hunger or thirst, which we readily acknowledge as natural signals, loneliness carries a stigma that silences sufferers. Research shows that 72% of people experiencing chronic loneliness never discuss it with others, fearing judgment or appearing weak. However, just as public figures like Prince William, Lady Gaga, and Michelle Obama have helped destigmatize depression by sharing their experiences, we can reduce the shame around loneliness by recognizing it as a near-universal human condition. Recent studies indicate that 97% of people experience significant loneliness at some point in their lives, making it one of the most common human experiences. The concept of loneliness only entered English in the late 16th century, distinct from the earlier term, oneliness. While Shakespeare described a lonely dragon in Coriolanus, oneliness carried no negative connotations. It represented solitary reflection and spiritual connection. In religious societies where God connected everyone, as John Donne wrote, no man is an island entire of itself. The shift in perception began when Milton linked loneliness to Satan in Paradise Lost, casting moral judgment on isolation. This cultural shift coincided with growing individualism, declining religious influence, and economic changes that emphasized personal achievement over community belonging. Culture shapes our social expectations and thus our experience of loneliness. Dr. Ami Rocox discovered that loneliness occurs when social experience fails to meet social expectations, the shoulds we absorb from our surroundings. These expectations vary dramatically across cultures, creating different loneliness thresholds. In Southern Europe, where family ties are expected to be strong, isolated seniors feel lonelier than their Northern European counterparts, where solitude is more accepted. I witnessed this cultural contrast when our Ethiopian Uber driver described the communal childcare in Addis Ababa, where neighbors readily watch each other's children for days, a stark contrast to the isolated parenting many experience in America despite modern conveniences. Similarly, my own childhood experiences visiting India, where spontaneous visits from extended family were common and everyone was addressed as uncle or auntie, created one enormous family network. Modern society pushes us toward independence, even as we crave the interconnectedness our ancestors relied on. The Hutterite colonies exemplify extreme collectivism, living by the principle that all that believed were together and had all things common. However, this connection comes at the price of conformity. Those who don't adhere to traditional roles face painful disapproval. The ideal might be a third cultural model, combining both strengths, solid common ground with freedom of individual expression, creating pockets for bonding that catch people before they fall through society's cracks. Tom Tate, former Anaheim mayor, demonstrated this approach by fostering a culture of kindness through initiatives like Hi Neighbor and Million Acts of Kindness, which reduced bullying and suspensions by half in schools. While loneliness may be as old as humanity, we've reached an important inflection point. The pace of technological change has become dizzying. While telephones took decades to reach half of American households, cell phones achieved this in just 5 years. This acceleration creates tension in our social fabric, forcing us to either adapt quickly or fall behind. Social media presents particularly complex challenges. While platforms like Facebook initially promise connection with long-lost friends, they often deliver comparison rather than meaningful dialogue. Research shows mixed results about technology's impact. Oxford researchers found digital screen time has a small negative effect on adolescents' well-being, with moderate use, 1 to 2 hours daily, being optimal. However, University of Pittsburgh researchers discovered heavy social media users were twice as likely to feel lonely as light users. When tethered to devices, we're not fully present in either virtual or physical spaces. Research confirms that even the mere presence of phones during conversations reduces empathy and emotional connection. Fubbing, snubbing others in favor of phones, has become widespread, with 46.3% of adults reporting their partners have done this, leading to more relationship conflicts. Geographic mobility presents additional challenges to maintaining social connections. Unlike the gradual community-building process of earlier generations, today's rapid transportation allows migration to happen overnight. While technology theoretically enables maintaining distant relationships, we still need local community. As a Chinese saying notes, distant water cannot help you with a fire nearby. Increasing longevity means many people outlive partners, friends, and even children, leading to profound isolation among the elderly. This problem is particularly acute in rapidly modernizing Asian countries like China and Korea, where traditional multi-generational households are disappearing. Seniors raised to expect reverence and care from younger generations now feel abandoned, with suicide rates among the elderly skyrocketing. Our increasingly politicized climate of distrust and division further fuels loneliness. When we lack strong social connections, we struggle to listen to different perspectives, quickly judging and assuming the worst about those who disagree with us. This creates a vicious cycle. Disconnection breeds judgment, making collaboration impossible, which worsens societal problems and fuels more anger, fear, and alienation. Loneliness wears many disguises, appearing as anger, alienation, or sadness, while attaching itself to trauma and preventing healing. Beneath the surface of pain often lurks loneliness, as exemplified by veterans like Anthony Doran, who lost the profound connection he felt with his fellow soldiers in Afghanistan. Despite facing daily danger, Anthony considered his military service the best year of his life because of the deep bonds formed with his unit. Upon returning home, he found civilian life chaotic and purposeless, falling into depression, anxiety, and substance abuse. The connection between loneliness and addiction is particularly strong. Bill Wilson, Alcoholics Anonymous co-founder, recognized this link, writing, "Almost without exception, alcoholics are tortured by loneliness." His own recovery journey revealed that helping another alcoholic strengthened his sobriety, establishing AA's cornerstone principle of sponsorship, where service becomes a two-way gift benefiting both giver and receiver. Dr. Brian Robinson's experience with workaholism illustrates how achievement can mask profound loneliness. Growing up with an alcoholic father, Brian found refuge in constant productivity, avoiding relationships to prevent further emotional wounds. If you don't let people in and you don't let yourself get too close, you can't get your heart stomped on again. Thus, aloneness seems to be the antidote against the threat of hurt, although it imprisons us. Many loneliness stories begin with childhood trauma. Adverse childhood experiences, ACEs, can permanently alter a child's developing brain and immune system. These traumas create heightened sensitivity to social threats, making connection difficult despite deep longing for acceptance. Werner's groundbreaking 60-year Kauai study revealed the critical protective factor against childhood adversity, social connections. Children who bonded with at least one stable, nurturing adult, whether parent, grandparent, sibling, or surrogate, gained protection against adversity. These relationships proved vital, as children only needed one such connection. What mattered was having someone emotionally stable, mature, and consistently available. Authentic connection begins with our relationship to ourselves. Serena Bayan's experience of profound loneliness upon arriving at college illustrates this principle. Despite her outward confidence and accomplishments, Serena felt a disturbing sense of disconnection in her empty dorm room at the University of Pennsylvania. Having left behind her identity forged within her tribe of family and friends, she suddenly felt invisible both to others and herself. When a mentor asked if she might be depressed, Serena realized her loneliness had developed into depression. Instead of transferring schools, she began therapy and reconnected with activities she loved. A transformative summer yoga teacher training introduced her to a community built on vulnerability and authenticity. What ultimately allowed Serena to overcome her loneliness wasn't just supportive parents and friends, but reconnecting with herself. This inner connection gave her the foundation to establish new relationships from the inside out. Thomas Merton's insight resonates with Serena's experience. When we feel socially disconnected, we often feel unknown not just to others, but to ourselves. The fog of loneliness blurs our internal mirrors, obscuring our strengths, value, and sources of joy that would normally connect us to the world. The ancient wisdom to know thyself is fundamental to connecting with others, yet harder than it seems. Self-knowledge requires objectivity about ourselves and is a lifelong process, not a destination. To better understand ourselves, we must reflect on what we value, how we respond to stress, what we're grateful for, and what we yearn for. Self-compassion forms the crucial bridge between self-knowledge and self-acceptance. Dr. Jack Kornfield, a renowned Buddhist monk, discovered through his meeting with the Dalai Lama that self-hatred was a foreign concept in Tibetan culture, where loving kindness toward oneself is fundamental. This compassion shields us from others' judgment, helps us grow through pain, and allows us to see our light amid darkness. In our perpetually racing world, finding moments of solitude requires deliberate effort, but is essential for self-connection. These pauses don't demand retreats or vows of silence. They can be brief periods of meditation, prayer, nature walks, or quiet contemplation that allow our minds to wander without agenda. During these moments, we tune in to our emotions, listen to our bodies, and make sense of our interactions with others. If human connections form through a process that starts within us and reaches outward, that process might best be called friendship. Everyone at every stage of life needs friends. They are the social glue binding couples, families, and communities together. While some struggle with making and keeping friends, increasing their risk of loneliness, others possess friendship skills that serve as natural defenses against isolation. According to Dr. Robin Dunbar, humans naturally form three distinct circles of friendship that correspond to the three dimensions of loneliness. Intimate confidants in our inner circle, typically no more than five people, casual friends in our middle circle, and community connections in our outer circle. We devote roughly 60% of our social energy to inner circle relationships, which require the most time and attention to maintain. The Harvard study of adult development, now in its eighth decade, revealed that close relationships are better predictors of health and happiness than IQ, wealth, or social class. According to study director Dr. Robert Waldinger, people most satisfied with their relationships at age 50 were the healthiest at 80. These inner circle relationships serve as our primary defense against intimate loneliness. Middle circle relationships, up to about 150 casual friends with whom we enjoy spending time, provide essential protection against relational loneliness. The therapeutic effects of group gatherings stem from natural social behaviors that evolved as biochemical substitutes for one-on-one grooming. Laughter, one of our most powerful connectors, triggers endorphin release and creates instant bonds through shared experience. Similarly, synchronized activities like singing, dancing, or team sports dramatically increase endorphin production. Our outer circle extends to about 500 people, acquaintances we know through work, neighborhoods, organizations, and online interactions. Though these relationships lack the vulnerability of closer friendships, even simple recognition and welcoming smiles help us feel known and rooted in place, protecting against collective loneliness. The workplace represents a critical source of connection, since many people spend more waking hours with colleagues than with family or friends. At the Surgeon General's office, Murthy implemented Inside Scoop, a practice where team members shared personal stories for 5 minutes during weekly meetings. This simple ritual transformed their workplace culture. Team members felt more valued, spoke up more frequently, appeared less stressed, and developed stronger connections to both colleagues and their mission. While strengthening our community connections today is vital, our children represent the future of a connected world. From infancy through adolescence, children thrive on emotional connection yet face complex social hurdles requiring thoughtful guidance. Today's youngest generations navigate a culture that prioritizes fame, wealth, and status over kindness and character, with adolescents and young adults experiencing some of the highest rates of loneliness. The social education of our children is just as important as their academic education, and the two are deeply intertwined. Research demonstrates this connection powerfully. Studies show that children with close families and supportive parents tend to feel more socially adept and have higher self-esteem and fewer academic problems. As researchers noted in pediatrics, mundane aspects of family life such as talking to one another, having dinner together, and knowing about the adolescent's friends seem to matter. Technology presents unprecedented challenges for today's parents. Teenagers average over 6.5 hours daily on screen-based entertainment, leaving minimal time for face-to-face interaction. Dr. Delaney Rustin, filmmaker of Screenagers, advocates a collaborative rather than disciplinary approach to technology management. She recommends parents listen with genuine curiosity about children's online experiences, openly discuss appropriate online behavior, and model their own struggles with technology boundaries. Beyond emotional intelligence, active compassion through service helps children develop social connectedness. After a school shooting in Charlotte, teacher Justin Parmenter created Undercover Agents of Kindness, where students randomly select classmates to perform acts of kindness for. The program transformed classroom dynamics as students delivered encouraging notes, homemade treats, and thoughtful gifts to peers they might otherwise never interact with. The gold standard for childhood compassion comes when children initiate kindness themselves. Dennis Esteman, a Haitian immigrant who experienced loneliness in American schools, created We Dine Together at his Florida high school. He and classmates would find isolated students during lunch and invite them to join their growing community. The program spread to 15 schools the following year, evolving into a student-led movement for inclusion worldwide. Parents face a dual challenge. They must model healthy social connections for their children, while many struggle with loneliness themselves. This is especially true for parents dealing with poverty, violence, trauma, and other hardships that make parenting isolating. These parents most need community support, yet have the fewest resources to build it. Creating a connected life begins with daily decisions, making time for people, showing up authentically, seeking others with kindness. It requires courage to be vulnerable and take chances on others. As we build connected lives, we make possible a connected world, one where schools, workplaces, technology, laws, and culture support human connection. The workplace principles of high-quality connection and service to others can be transferred to our broader social interactions. Whether shopping, taking children to the park, or simply waiting at a street corner, we can approach others as multifaceted individuals rather than merely functional entities in our lives. Research confirms that despite our assumptions that strangers don't want to be approached, most welcome friendly interaction. A Chicago study found commuters enjoyed their trips more when they conversed with strangers, regardless of personality type. Eric Klinenberg's study of the 1995 Chicago heat wave revealed how critical community connection can be. Neighborhoods with vibrant public spaces and strong social infrastructure had dramatically lower death rates than isolated communities where residents became estranged from one another. In response to such insights, cities worldwide are creating common spaces where strangers can connect, from Colombia's car-free Sundays to the UK's happy-to-chat benches. Peacebuilding expert John Paul Lederach suggests solutions drawn from his work in global conflict zones, creating mutual belonging by physically meeting people where they live, sharing communal spaces like community gardens, and befriending as an active verb built on authenticity, reaching and revealing despite differences. His simple prescription: find someone different, invite them for coffee without trying to change their mind, listen to understand, speak from the heart, and persist in the relationship. Patients in their dying days never measure life by bank accounts or status, but by relationships. Those that brought joy, those they wish they'd been more present for, those that broke their hearts. In life's final moments, human connections rise to the top. Though many struggle with loneliness and larger forces affect our interactions, our drive to connect remains alive. I witnessed this at 7 years old when my parents rushed to comfort a newly widowed patient in the middle of the night. Seeing my mother in her traditional Indian sari embracing the grieving widow showed me the extraordinary potential of love to heal and bring us together as one.